think today's gospel passage is one of, represents us with one of the most lovable characters of those who receive healings in the gospels. We have this man born blind who confronts the Pharisees. And it's interesting because he wasn't there begging for a miracle. There's other moments in the gospel where there's someone who's on the side of the road or is blind or is a leper and comes out to Jesus and is yelling after him and telling him, "I need a miracle, help me." This man is simply sitting there along the side of the road. And he's a person who was born blind. Later on in the gospels, they just recognize him as, oh yeah, the guy that was sitting over there that was born blind, that he's just been there. He'd become part of the landscape. The guy that everyone saw there, maybe a few people threw him some coins. But he had become invisible. But what's beautiful is that he was not invisible for Christ. He walks by and this discussion ensues where the disciples are asking this question that we'll get to in just a second. But the first thing that I want to remark about this person is his holy audacity. He gets interrogated 4 times by the highest religious authorities in the time. And he's someone who, he was born blind, can't read, probably had very little education. And yet he responds with such ardor, and he's able to hold his own. And he comes back to his testimony over and over again. "I do not know whether he is a sinner. One thing I know, I was blind, and now I see." And that's one of the key things throughout this gospel. Recognition that he was blind, and now being able to see. And he lives this in this interior freedom. And this sentence, I think, is a testament to that interior freedom. The freedom that we all desire, the freedom that the world is looking for, sometimes in the externals, to be able to do whatever I want. But interior freedom is truly being able to respond to what God is placing before us. Recognizing what God is doing in our lives, even through the challenges. "I was blind, and now I see." And the exchange is almost humorous. There's a second moment where they call him back in and says, "So tell us again, what happened to you?" He's like, "Do you want to hear it again? You didn't listen to me the first time. You want me to tell you again? Do you want to be his disciples?" And he's almost poking at him, jabbing at them. And to understand this, the social differences between him and the people he's talking to were huge. And this was a lesson also for the early church and a lesson for us, that our baptism is supposed to produce this holy audacity in us. We're not supposed to be anxious, timid, shrinking believers, but we're supposed to be filled with what the early church called parousia in Greek, this holy audacity, a boldness, a going out, a sharing what the Lord has done for me. How many times in my life have I gone quiet? How many times do I keep my faith as something that I just do on Sundays, or I keep it to myself, and I don't share the marvels that the Lord has done in me? Not for my glory, but for his glory. This brings us to the second point. The disciples asked Jesus, "Who sinned?" As if it were obvious. This guy's blind from birth. Somebody must have sinned somewhere for this to happen. Was it his parents or was it him? There's like 2 choices there. And Jesus, like, answer choice C, none of the above. And here, Jesus reworks the entire understanding of suffering with just a few phrases. And it's beautiful, and it's a lesson for us as well. Just throughout history, humanity looks for an explanation for suffering. Why do we suffer? In ancient Hebrew society, it was because someone sinned. Someone messed up along the road somewhere, so that's why this person is suffering. That's why I'm suffering. Someone is at fault, looking for some reason for it. Other cultures speak of karma, reincarnation, that you're somebody in another life did something terrible, and that's why this person's suffering, and that's why I'm suffering. There's always an explanation that there was someone at fault. And how often we do that as well. We try and explain away our suffering or the suffering of others. Well, someone must have done something wrong. Or even that mentality pervades the question of, why did this happen to me? Why am I going through this? I didn't do anything. The flip side of that same mentality. And Jesus destroys all of that with his gentle tenderness, but also with his force. By simply saying, neither this man nor his parents sinned. This happened that God may be glorified through him. His suffering, his blindness, so many years lost, being the blind man begging on the corner that no one knew even his name. His name never appears in here. All of that was leading up to a moment of God's glory for Jesus to reveal himself, and he destroys the entire framework of our understanding of suffering with that one simple phrase. God's glory made manifest. There's a beautiful story of a woman who was recently beatified, who, you know, you're starting to get old when there's saints who were born after you, died before you, and now they're canonized saints. It's kind of a cool thing. And Chiara Corbelli, who's an Italian woman, the beautiful story of she and her husband, their courtship, getting married, and they had two tragic losses of children that were deformed in the womb, had genetic problems, passed away. Finally get pregnant a third time with a healthy baby, and she finds out that she has cancer and has to defer her treatment in order to save the life of her son. And so there's this contrast of light and darkness. And there's a moment in her testimony in the book that she and her husband wrote before she passed away, her memoirs. And there's this moment where her husband goes in and she's sitting there with their recently born son in her arms. She knows that she only has a few days left. She has a patch on her eye, and her husband comes in and she's looking up towards heaven, and she has this huge smile on her face. And her face is just radiating a beauty that he can't even describe, that her husband can't even describe. And he goes up to her and he says to her, he's totally distraught, and looks at her and he says, "Is he really that good?" And she looks back up towards heaven and she says, "Yes, he's that good." Even in the midst of that challenge, even in the midst of that suffering, her offering, her union with him, God was bringing glory through that. Something for our lives as well. And this light and darkness that pervades this gospel passage shows us this deep symbolism that shows us the reality of what Christ is bringing into their lives. We have this man who lived in darkness his entire life, never saw sunrise, never saw sunset, never saw his mother or his father's face. He had been living in darkness, and Jesus comes by and brings the light. The Pharisees had thought that they were living in light, and they were actually living in darkness. They were incapable of recognizing the light when it came. And why? Because they needed their own certainties. They needed something to grasp onto that they could fully control. And sometimes that was laws or rules. And we each have those. We each have those little idols in our lives. Ways that we try and control everything. Ways that we try to think that we can see. And Jesus oftentimes enters into our lives and asks us to recognize where we're blind. To recognize that there are places of darkness in our lives. And he doesn't call us out. He doesn't accuse us. He just asks us to recognize it so that he can come in. Where are the places in my life that I'm living in light? And where are the places where I have perhaps made a pact with darkness in favor of my own human certainties? And Jesus comes back to this man. It's interesting because the man never saw Jesus' face. He couldn't recognize him. As Jesus puts the mud that he made with his saliva on his eyes, sends him to wash, and then Jesus takes off. And this man goes through this whole trial, basically, going back and forth. And if you ask him to point him out in a line of people, he wouldn't be able to tell you who Jesus was. But Jesus goes back to him. He goes back to find him. And he asks him, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" And he says, "Tell me, Lord, who he is, that I might believe." And just that beautiful encounter right there, where Jesus says, "I am he who is speaking with you." And he falls to the ground and worships him. And there's this whole progression in this man's life. There's four different moments in which the man born blind refers to Jesus. The first time he says, this man came, spit on the ground, put some mud on my eyes, and now I see. The second time they're asking, you know, who is he? And he steps it up a notch. He's like, this guy's a prophet. And then the third time they ask him, and he's getting more and more beat down and more pushed away. And his audacity, that holy audacity, grows. And with it, his faith grows. The third time they ask him, he says, this guy's the Messiah. You know, who just wanders around healing random blind guys? He's got to be the Messiah. And then the fourth time, he recognizes him as the Lord. He recognizes that this is God, that he's in his presence. And he falls down and worships him. And it shows us that oftentimes it takes time to be able to see. It's a beautiful quote by George O'Keefe that says that. It takes time to see. We need to contemplate the Lord. That's why the church gives us these beautiful times of preparation, these 40 days of Lent that we have, time to pray, time to allow ourselves to go from seeing Jesus as just a man or even a prophet with a nice message about peace to the Messiah, to know this is my God. This is the Lord who has come, not just for humanity in general, but for me. The Lord who wants to step into my blindness, my darkness, who wants to be my light. So that together with this blind man who now sees, we can too give our testimony. One thing I know, I was blind, and now I see.